I'm curious your thoughts on the news yesterday of, you know, Oklahoma and Texas wanting and possibly joining the SEC.
Are you setting me up to say the same line again, or do you want a new one? I got a lot of thoughts on it. First off, you know, like I tell recruits all the time, we're the best league in college football, and everybody wants to play there, and now you got two iconic brands that want to join too. And it's an exclusive club, and not everybody gets in, so good luck. Especially if A&M has anything to do with it. Besides, Ross and Jimbo, I think Jimmy Sexton doesn't want him in because he doesn't represent those two head coaches, so he might lose his leverage point there. I can keep going if you want. I have no idea how any of that stuff works. It's way above my pay grade. I coach football. I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night. I stay here, so I can't forecast the future. No idea what that's going to look like. But, man, Central Michigan is going to be a tough challenge. And I know Jim McElwain's a heck of a football coach. And I got my hands full trying to beat Central Michigan. So worrying about when Mark Womack's going to add Texas and OU to my schedule is just a headache I can't afford.
That is Missouri coach Eli Drinkwitz there. He had said some similar things before. And that's just one of the thoughts of one coach. I like how at the end there, he's like, man, we got to worry about Central Michigan. Mizzou football, it's weird how he says it's an exclusive club. And who thinks Missouri when they think exclusive club? It's not me. I don't think that. I don't. Yeah, ask KU fans. They're going to be like, not at all. There's nothing exclusive about Missouri. But anyway. That's Eli Drinkwitz and his thoughts. But like I said, I love how he just diverted his attention to Central Michigan there at the end. Listen, you know he cares about it. You know everybody cares about it, Missouri and Texas A&M, and the possibility of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and kind of shaking up what they have there in the SEC with Missouri and Texas A&M, who initially were in the Big 12 with Texas and Oklahoma and left, and some of that due to Texas. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. We have much more about that coming up here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. We'll also take a look at some of the other things that are going on in the sporting world right now. The NFL has new policies with COVID and possible postponements, cancellations, forfeits, etc. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, a NFL assistant coach has passed away. There's trades in the major leagues that are starting to happen with the trade deadline coming up in Major League Baseball. The Royals are back on the field today, and Cleveland has a new mascot name, new team name. We'll talk about that, as well here on the Sports Ticket. So we welcome you in here on Katy Country 94 on this Friday, July 23rd. We're going to start first with some local sports, and then we'll get I'm going to open again like we did yesterday with the conference realignment possibilities, and then roll from there. Local sports last night, Pee Wee State Baseball Tournament at Clyde in the semifinals, and Concordia Chevys beat Hanover 8-2. Bremen over Pike Valley 7-0, so that sets up a championship tonight between the Concordia Chevys and Bremen. That'll be about 8:30. It'll follow the third-place game between Pike Valley and Hanover at 7 o'clock here tonight in Clyde. So congratulations to those teams that are still alive and playing for the championship in third place here tonight. American Legion AA Zone 3 tournament finishing off tonight at Bill Foreman Field in Beloit. Republic County against Beloit at 6 o'clock. If Republic County wins, they would move on to the AA state tournament. If Beloit wins, that forces a winner-take-all for the zone title and a trip to state. Again, that's first game at 6 o'clock, and the second game would be, I think it's usually 20 to 25 minutes following that first game if Beloit would be able to get a win and force that deciding game and the elimination game all-in winner-take-all situation. K-18 state tournament starts Saturday in Lucas in baseball. First-round matchups, Phillipsburg against Clifton Clyde at 9 o'clock, approximately 11:30, Concordia CMB against Norton. Smith Center takes on Quinter at 2 o'clock approximately, then approximately 4:30 at Scott City against Clay Center. All the brackets and results from postseason baseball that I just mentioned can be found at ncksports.com. So that's a look at what's going on as far as local sports are concerned. All right, let's dive into the Big 12, SEC, Oklahoma, Texas, what that means for other schools in the conference, what that means for the SEC, and what that means for other people going forward as far as conference realignment is concerned and the possibility of that happening. After reports surfaced Wednesday, Oklahoma and Texas are in contact with the SEC about possibly joining their league. Big 12 officials obviously are searching for answers. Thursday, the conference made it clear they expect the programs to adhere to the bylaws, TV contracts that they'd previously signed. Again, those roll through 2025 in the Big 12. Big 12 ADs and presidents, chancellors held a video conference Thursday night to talk about potential departures of those two original Big 12 members in Texas and Oklahoma. Texas and OU leaders were invited to the meeting, but as you can expect, decided not to participate. The conference did say in a statement to ESPN, quote, there is a recognition that institutions may act in their own self-interest. However, there is an expectation that members adhere to the conference bylaws and the enforcement of grant of rights agreements, unquote. Big 12 bylaws do say that any withdrawing member must give the league at least 18 months notice. Also, an exit fee as the teams leaving would have to pay the league a buyout, which would equal the sum of distributions that would otherwise be paid to that school during the final 2 years of its membership. So, for example, last year the Big 12 distributed nearly $38 million to its members, each one of its members, individually. So Texas and Oklahoma would have to pay about $76 million each in that structure if they were to leave the conference early. And they would also forfeit all their second and third tier TV rights as well. So like your Longhorn Network, if Texas leaves, they cannot take the Longhorn Network with them until the contract runs out. So, and I don't even know if Texas wants the Longhorn Network anymore, to be completely honest with you. It hasn't worked out the way I think they or ESPN or anybody really expected it to. There's Texas thinking they're bigger than everything else and that just everything we do is going to work. And people love our brand so much that they'll go ahead and get the Longhorn Network. That didn't work out the way they wanted. But second and third tier TV rights, which would be the Longhorn Network, which would be your ESPN Plus, Big 12 Now, things like that, that you get on that subscription service that you have to pay $5 a month for, that some people go crazy about. But all those second and third tiers would be unavailable for Texas. So basically for Texas, Oklahoma doesn't have any. They'll use the second and third tier system that the SEC has, because they would be part of that. But, you know, things like the Longhorn Network can't go over to Texas. That stays in, and I don't believe they'd be able to start anything up new until they would leave the Big 12 and actually be cleared of that contract that they have with the grant of rights agreement with the Big 12. So again, that's something to look at with this. It said the Big 12 officials also discussed what the conference might do if OU and Texas did leave, and a source said that included looking into whether other Power 5 programs may want to join, or if other schools, many of whom have already previously been mentioned or even presented a package to the Big 12 to join. When the Big 12 a couple years back said, hey, give us your best and we'll see if you're good enough to join our conference. You're not good enough to join our conference, they said to every single school that submitted something to the Big 12. They decided to stand pat at 10 and, in essence, decided to say, hey, oh, nothing's wrong with the league right now. We'll be fine through 2025. It's 4 years until 2025, and things are not fine for the Big 12 today. So we'll see if the Big 12 can get anything worked out. As we talked about yesterday, it sounds like it seems like to us, if OU and Texas are gone, the Big 12, those other eight members will be left holding the bag and will have to scramble to find some other place to go. Now, there's been rumors about where some of those teams might go. I'll talk about that later on, but we're just first getting to this Big 12 SEC part of things. The Big 12 did say again in that statement to ESPN, quote, the eight members strongly desire to retain the current composition, which has proven it can compete at the highest levels. This is a time of dramatic change when intercollegiate athletics that presents both opportunities and challenges. And the Big 12 conference looks forward to continuing to play a major role in its evolution, unquote. Yeah, you look forward to playing a major role in its evolution. Of course, the Big 12 wants everything. The eight members strongly desire to retain the current composition. Duh. I mean, that's not hard to figure out. Which has proven it can compete at the highest levels. Sure, Oklahoma's made it to the college football playoff. Baylor just won a national championship in men's basketball. So, yeah, they've proven they can compete at the highest level. Now, as far as winning a national championship in football, they haven't done that. Oklahoma's gotten there and been embarrassed a couple times there. So what compete at the highest level is happening in the SEC on a regular basis. That's a fact. ACC, some one team from the ACC is competing at the highest level on a regular basis. But, yeah, sure, if you say compete at the highest level is just getting into the playoff and never winning a championship, then, yeah, that's what the Big 12 has done. Oklahoma's been good enough to get there, but that's it. So I always laugh when the Big 12, you know, pumps up Oklahoma, or they pump up, hey, we've got two straight Heisman winners. Yeah, Oklahoma had two straight Heisman winners, not the Big 12. Oklahoma has competed at the highest level and gotten into the college football playoff. Not Texas. Oklahoma's at least been there. But it's like, oh, our conference is competing at the highest level. Well, is it, though? Because there's, it's kind of like what we talked about in basketball until this last year, right, when Baylor ended up rolling through and winning the NCAA title there in men's Division I basketball. Same thing we always talked about. Is the Big 12 competing at the highest level, or is Kansas just winning every year in the conference? Because they were. They won 14 straight conference championships. So some of those things the Big 12 says, obviously, it's to make them look good. And, yes, obviously the eight members strongly desire to retain the current composition, as the quote says in the statement. I strongly desire to remain the current composition because I'm a K-State fan, and you as a KU fan, if you're out there as well listening to this, you strongly desire to retain the current composition because things are concerning moving forward if you don't retain the current composition. So the Big 12 is so far behind. The Big 12 is always so reactive to everything that's going on. You used to be able to blame it on Dan Beebe, but I think just top to bottom, this conference doesn't know what they're doing. And it's been that way for quite a long time. Dan Beebe can't be the scapegoat anymore. This is on Bob Bowlesby. This is on everybody else. So, again, the Big 12 officials met to discuss those possible departures. You know, some of the teams they were talking about were like UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, BYU might make good additions. These are the same teams we've been talking about for forever. Add Connecticut to that list. Otherwise, what are we doing? You're going to lose OU in Texas and act like everything's going to be all right if you add UCF and Houston or Cincinnati and BYU or all of them, none of them, one of them, two of them, three of them. I don't care how many it is. You lose OU in Texas, this conference is nothing. It means nothing on a landscape of college football, which is what this is all about. Latest news coming out today. This is Brett McMurphy, actually, on Twitter said Texas and Oklahoma officials reached out to the SEC in late December, early January already. Sources close to the schools told Stadium. Texas and OU, it's quote, Texas and OU have been in lockstep the whole time. They decided then they were leaving. It was just figuring out where. They've been talking about this since late December, early January. These are rival schools that are in lockstep, this quote says, to move and get out of the conference. Now, some of the reasoning is like, what are you talking about? Like, you are part of this. You understand what this conference is and what the schedule is going to look like. So I know this is an opportunity, I guess, to head out, and this is the time if you want to do that. But again, it's just, you know, what do you do moving forward as the Big 12? Because Texas and Oklahoma are clearly united on this. Now, we'll see if those SEC schools are united, but they don't have to be fully united. They just need 11 of 14 of their schools to go ahead and approve Texas and Oklahoma coming in to their conference. So, again, that's an interesting tweet there from Brett McMurphy from Stadium, talking about how this has been going on for quite some time now. I got to find, there was something I saw yesterday about some teams and possible destinations, but I'll look for that here momentarily. This is Riley Gates, who's been on our show before. Obviously, people know him from Beloit. Used to be working at Go Power Cat, but now works at the 24/7 National Sports Desk. I'm going to kind of read through what he has posted kind of just aggregating from other people, the Big 12 has had an intense 2 days with the sudden and shocking news that Oklahoma and Texas are reportedly exploring a move out of the league to join the SEC. Report from Kirk Bowles of the Austin American-Statesman says the move for those two schools to join the SEC is, quote, almost done and could become official in a week. Bowles also reported that this has been a move that has been in the works for a while now. Prominent Big 12 source told Bowles they've been working on this for a minimum of 6 months, and A&M leadership was left out of discussions and wasn't told about it. So that's interesting. An SEC source told Bowles that they wouldn't dispute the fact that A&M has been left out of secret negotiations with Texas and the SEC. Realignment rumors of these two schools leaving for the SEC have been buzzing, obviously, since Tuesday when the initial report surfaced. A lot of speculation going on. CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd got a statement that said, Oklahoma and Texas are founding members of the Big 12. We value their traditions and history of success. The eight members strongly desire to retain current composition, which has proven it can compete at the highest levels. Same quote that we've heard from the Big 12 in the ESPN story as well. So Big 12, again, held their conference call last night, and they're all wanting to get rolling. Chip Brown from Horns 24/7 saying a source close to the situation said Texas and Oklahoma wouldn't bolt the Big 12 for the SEC before the league's current media rights agreement expires in 2025. If the schools are fit for the SEC, Texas and OU would likely announce their intentions to leave the Big 12 so the Big 12 schools could make their own future plans by the time the league's current media rights agreement expires. So sounds like, hey, we want to leave, but let's just get the ball moving here. And this way we don't have to pay the $76 million. So those are some of the newest things that are coming out right now about the possible move of Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. So there you hear. It's, again, Kirk Bowles saying that possibility that this could happen by the end of the week, which would be probably next week, I would guess, within a week, maybe middle of next week, a week after they started talking about this. But obviously there's a lot of traction to this, and Texas and OU want to go to the SEC. That's pretty clear about where they want to be. So, again, how does that affect everything? We're kind of talking about this yesterday, and everybody's got their own, like, oh, here's what it's going to look like moving forward, and this is what we should do. We talked ad nauseum yesterday about, you know, why does it have to be four 16-team power conferences? Why can't it be, or super conferences, or whatever you want to say that? Why can't it be, you know, all these teams just, or conferences say, hey, we're content where we're at. We're going to switch things around a little bit and go from there. There was something yesterday that came out to where there were emails and texts and calls saying that Pac-12 wanted to add Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, K-State, and Iowa State to go to 16 teams, and those four in a division with Arizona State, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. I don't know how true that is, because I don't think that tweet even exists anymore that I first saw. So I'll check it again here, but Pac-12 expansion, there's a little bit of that. Yeah, I don't even know that that's I'm going to scroll down. Had it been yesterday, the tweet's not there anymore, so I don't know how much truth that to that report is. It would surprise me. As you heard the teams that I said, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, K-State, and Iowa State are the schools that Pac-12 might want to add. That would kind of go against, Pac-12 might, like, they don't have religious universities, right? They have private schools, obviously, with Stanford, but they don't have religious schools in their league, and so Baylor's not a part of that list that was in there, and obviously omitted there of note would be Kansas, so that would show that if true, then football obviously is driving this, and Kansas would be left out in the cold because they don't have a good football program. I don't think any of that's true, to be completely honest with you. I think that was something that was just kind of thrown about, and things that this says this is moving fast. Things move fast. People just put stuff out there without really even thinking about it. So, again, I don't know how much I believe the Pac-12 wants to add those schools right now, and they're fighting for it to get to 16 teams with – two different divisions of 16. Not sure how much I buy what they're trying to sell on that one. So, but I am buying what they're trying to sell with Texas and Oklahoma wanting to go to the SEC. This obviously has way more traction than anybody might have thought right when this report came out. But this, again, is obviously something that has a lot of traction and most likely is something that's going to happen. I think that we've kind of all, even in the short time that we've talked about this, the last 48 to 72 hours, we understand that it's a fluid situation. It's a situation where this is probably happening. Something different is going to happen within conference realignment and things like that. So now the questions that are on the table are, is it a right-away thing? Are they going to give the 18 months notice to the Big 12 so they can avoid paying the fees of exiting the conference? And it looks like that's on the table right now as well. We're not 100% sure when it will happen or how it will happen. It does seem like the SEC will vote this in. That's what all indications are showing right now. Missouri and Texas A&M don't want it, but Missouri and Texas A&M are not going to mess things up when only two out of the 14 schools, because all they need is 11 out of 14 to approve it. They don't need unanimous. Who's going to back away from it, from the SEC, other than the two schools that were in the Big 12 that are saying, hey, we don't want these other two former Big 12 opponents to come into our conference? And I just don't think that's going to happen. I think the SEC, I mean, why would you not? If you're the likes of Florida, Alabama, LSU, you know, all these schools that Auburn's of the world, the, you know, even Georgia's the world, why would you not want these two teams in your conference? I don't see the downside of it because, again, it's about college football and it's about money in those two teams, regardless of what Texas is doing. I saw a tweet yesterday that was saying, why would Texas want to leave the Big 12 and go to the SEC when they can't even compete in the Big 12? Saying they've only won it three times in 25 seasons. And, like, this is not just one tweet. It's other people. Like, why can't consistently compete in the SEC? How much more of a brand does Texas have in the SEC compared to the Big 12, and how much more money can they make? It is ridiculous. Yes, Texas is not winning in the Big 12, but it's not what it's about. If you're one of these schools, like, you have a better opportunity to make more money. A lot of times you're going to do it. And especially if you're in a situation where, like this says, you're not winning conference championships anyway, what changes? Like, okay, so I'm not winning in the Big 12 and I won't win in the SEC, but I'm getting a lot more money for not winning the SEC. And Oklahoma is going to fight and battle for, you know, at least division championships. We'll see how all that works out. But again, there's a lot of people that are like, well, why would these teams want to leave the Big 12 when they can be, well, when Oklahoma can be dominant in the conference and Texas hasn't been able to win in the Big 12, so why would they want to leave? It's all about money. It's all about the system. It's all about where you want to be in the end, and that's what's driving all of this. There's no surprise here. This is no different than what happened 10 years ago. So, again, it's going to throw things off. We talked yesterday about where we think teams might end up. I'm not going to speculate and go over all that again. There are some thoughts about conference realignment out there that are like, this does nothing to keep power status for the Big 12. If they would make up a conference, they try to find a lot of these AAC schools or try to, you know, join with some Pac-12 schools or get these independents like BYU. None of this is going to add and be enough to keep the Big 12 as a power conference standing alone without Oklahoma and Texas in their conference. I'm very confident of that. I'm fairly confident that K-State's on the lower part of the pecking order as well. That quote-unquote report yesterday would have proved me wrong on that, but again, that tweet that I saw is not even there anymore, so I don't think it's really that serious that the Pac-12 is looking at those four members to add to their conference. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. Maybe that'll change here in the next, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, once Texas and Oklahoma thing is figured out and where, if they're actually leaving and when they're actually leaving and all the details are put in on that. But this is not something that I feel like has traction for K-State to move to the Pac-12 and that they really want them, along with Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech, to make it 16 teams, two divisions of eight. I don't see it happening. Listen, if that is offered the day Texas and Oklahoma leave, Kansas State better be jumping on that without even thinking about it. There will be late games at 9 o'clock at night kicking off. Some of them in Manhattan. But if they get that opportunity and that actually happens, you don't even think about it. You go do it, keep your power status in what would now be the Power Four, and say, Big 12, you didn't treat us the way we wanted to be, and this is dissolving. This is over. You didn't hold up your end of the bargain. Why should anybody hold up theirs? And I feel like that's what Texas and Oklahoma are doing right now. It's like, you didn't hold up your end of the bargain. What are you doing? Hey, we'll see you later. It's not happening anymore, and you made your bed. You got to lie in it now. And I think that's what's going on right now with Big 12 Conference. And again, this is something we saw coming. Once we, you know, once that next contract runs out, we're talking about this. So we're 4 years ahead of when this should be happening based on those comments. But none of this should be a shock. None of this should be a surprise to anybody what's going on with possible conference realignment. So we'll keep an eye on all of it. Again, possibilities of Texas and Oklahoma would have to leave and pay, again, $76 million to exit the Big 12, or some are saying that they're just trying to get this all fixed up to give Big 12 proper notice of when they are actually going to leave and that everybody can get themselves in a situation where they need to be in and that they will not leave until the contract runs out, until the TV rights contract is over. So, again, that's what we're looking at right now with conference realignment possibilities. Again, we will continue to follow Big 12, SEC, Texas, Oklahoma, and obviously Kansas State and Kansas, and how that affects them moving forward in college athletics. All right, big story coming out yesterday in the National Football League, and it's kind of ruffled some feathers. We're going to tell you a little bit about that coming up here as well. But NFL informed teams on Thursday, and actually I'm just going to go ahead and pull up the tweets from Tom Pelissero. It's really an interesting look and in this memo that the NFL sent out to teams yesterday. I want to make sure I get the right thing pulled up here. And the tweet, initial tweet says, from Tom Pelissero, the NFL just informed clubs that if a game cannot be rescheduled during the 18-week season in 2021 due to a COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players, keyword unvaccinated, the team will, with the outbreak, will forfeit and be credited with a loss for playoff seeding. That's what sources are saying. The league intends to play its entire 272-game schedule over 18 weeks, 17 games per club. And the key is, from the statement and the memo, saying, quote, we do not anticipate adding a 19th week to accommodate games that cannot be rescheduled within the current 18 weeks of the regular season, unquote. Play on time or don't play is basically what they're saying. Other key competitive aspect of the memo, vaccinated individuals who test positive and are asymptomatic can return to duty after two negative tests 24 hours apart. Unvaccinated individuals are still subject to the mandatory 10-day isolation period. More strong language from the memo. Every club is obligated under the Constitution and bylaws to have its team ready to play at the scheduled time and place. A failure to do so is deemed conduct detrimental. There is no right to postpone a game. NFL's strongest step yet to incentivize vaccinations. In essence, vaccination status dictates action. What this tweet says from Tom Pelissero, quote, in the memo says, if a club cannot play due to a COVID spike in vaccinated individuals, we will attempt to minimize the competitive and economic burden on both participating teams, unquote. And there's a lot of precise language. And the biggest penalty for the players, here's another kicker. The memo says, if a game is canceled and cannot be rescheduled within the current 18-week schedule due to a COVID outbreak, neither team's players will receive their weekly paragraph 5 salary. Nobody gets paid. How is that even possible? How can some other team have a outbreak and then neither team's players are going to get paid for that week? What? How? Why? It's okay. So, okay, you're trying to incentivize vaccination so teams will get vaccinated and be able to play. And then you're saying one team will forfeit the game if they're not vaccinated. And that outbreak comes because the vaccination rates are too low. So you're going to give the other team, go ahead and give them a win, but you're not going to pay them? They didn't have the outbreak. They didn't do anything wrong. How are you going to take away their salary for a mistake that they did not make in your eyes, right? That's something I don't understand at all. Nobody gets paid. If a game is canceled and cannot be rescheduled within the current 18-week schedule due to a COVID outbreak, neither team's players will receive their weekly Paragraph 5 salary. Neither team. That's something that makes absolutely no sense. Some players are firing back. And this is from Fox News, NFL players firing back. The league issued a memo Thursday informing all 32 clubs COVID outbreaks among unvaccinated players could result in the forfeiture of games and loss of players. And a Cardinals veteran wideout DeAndre Hopkins tweeted shortly after news broke, the new policy makes him, quote, question my future in the NFL. Never thought I would say this, but being put in a position to hurt my team because I don't want to partake in the vaccine is making me question my future in the NFL, is what he said. And has Hopkins deleted the tweet a short time later, but sent another tweet that read, freedom, question mark. So obviously DeAndre Hopkins got in trouble for tweeting that out and then had to take it down, and all this is going on. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said in the memo that the league does not intend to add another week, as we just said. Los Angeles Rams cornerback Jalen Ramsey also took to Twitter to say the NFL is, quote, pressuring, influencing, unquote, players to get vaccinated under the new policies. Some of y'all clearly didn't get what I'm saying here. He said of an earlier tweet posted saying that he knows two people who tested positive for COVID despite being vaccinated. So, yeah. He says, my point is no teammate of mine will feel that pressure from me. I'm going to see if I can load this up. Kind of cut off the tweet that I was reading, so I'm going to go right to Twitter. Jalen Ramsey, because whether you are vaccinated or not, there is still a chance of getting COVID. I thought my point was simple, but I guess not. LOL. Just because my teammates personally decide not to get the vaccine, I won't think they're a bad teammate. That's all. It's all love. So some of the NFL players are firing back. Was what Jalen Ramsey's talking about. DJ Reed from the Seattle Seahawks, former K-State player, said, I didn't want to get the vaccine. We don't know the long-term effects. If you have the vaccine, you can still catch COVID. The NFL and NFLPA made getting the vaccine a competitive advantage. I just got my vaccine because I don't want to hinder my team. I don't know how I feel about that. So there's a guy that DJ's a good guy. I've talked to him multiple times after games at K-State, talked to him at Catbackers, right? So these are just concerns that some of the NFL players have. And so it's kind of where we're at right now in all of society, to be completely honest with you. A lot of people are feeling pressure to get the vaccine. And full disclosure, I have it. We talked about this the other day. I said I trust my doctor with my life. On his recommendation, I got the vaccine. I'm not telling other people that they need to get the vaccine. The NFL is telling other people that they need to get the vaccine. And I don't know what the bylaws are. I don't know if that all changed or what the issue is there. But the NFL is basically saying, do it or you're forfeiting games and forfeiting salary as well and not getting paid. The latest figures reported by the NFL Network show that more than 78% of players have received at least one dose of the vaccine, while 14 teams have 85% of their players vaccinated. But 78% is around the league of who is vaccinated. So strong repercussions if you have an outbreak and you're players are not vaccinated and you can't play the game. Sorry, it's a loss. You lose the game, you lose the you have a loss on your standings, and you don't get paid. Even if you're not on the team that has the outbreak, you're not getting paid. See you later. We're keeping your money. Just sorry. I know you didn't do anything wrong, but oh well, we're taking your money. That is absurd. Like, I get it, like they want to be like, okay, get your teams vaccinated, make sure you're in the right spots here, make sure that this outbreak didn't happen because your people were not vaccinated. But to punish the other team that is vaccinated, has no outbreak, they're ready to play football, they are ready to play the game, but nope, you're not going to get paid despite the fact you're ready. That's the one thing I can't get over. I can understand a little bit of it, but that is a little bit too far. So I'm hoping maybe that'll change moving forward with that part of it. Some bad news in the NFL. Looks like I actually accidentally closed that, so let me pull that back up here. A longtime NFL assistant coach, Greg Knapp, died following a bicycle accident. Tragic bicycling accident claimed the life of New York Jets passing game specialist Greg Knapp, who died Thursday as a result of severe injuries sustained in the collision. He was just 58 years old. He was hospitalized in critical condition after being struck by a motorist riding his bike in San Ramon, California, July 17th, and remained hospitalized through Thursday before passing away. Knapp's agent Jeff Spurbeck said in a statement today at 11:32 a.m. Pacific time, Greg Knapp, a.k.a. Knapper, was called back home to heaven, where he will be reunited with his dad, in a statement that was obtained by NFL Network's Steve Weich. So, sad story there. Jets coach Robert Saleh issued a statement on the passing of the longtime NFL assistant. He said Greg had such an inner peace about him that people always seemed to gravitate towards. He lived life in a loving way that helped him connect with people from all walks of life in a unique way. It is, in his short time here, I believe the people in this organization had a chance to experience that connection. Greg Knapp, who had spent notable, I knew the name, so he'd spent notable time with both the Denver Broncos and Las Vegas Raiders, so had been an assistant coach there, but again was currently with the New York Jets. A little bit of history on Greg Knapp. He actually played with the Kansas City Chiefs back in 1986, just off-season practice squad, then went to the Raiders off-season practice squad, 49ers, never actually played in an NFL game in a regular season, but was a longtime NFL coach, 2 years actually, from 95 to 2000, with the, to 2003 actually with the 49ers, Falcons offensive coordinator 04 to 06, Raiders offensive coordinator 2007 to 08, Seahawks offensive coordinator 2009, quarterback coach with the Texans 10 and 11, Raiders offensive coordinator 2012, and then the Broncos quarterback coach 13 to 16, and then this past three seasons he was the Falcons quarterback coach and had just been hired by the Jets and Robert Saleh as a passing game specialist for 2021. Never did get to coach any games with the Jets. Again, Greg Knapp gone at the age of 58 due to a bicycle accident and being run over there in California, being hit by a motor vehicle. So thoughts and condolences with Greg Knapp, his family. Tragic event there. All right, so we've covered the two really hot topics with realignment as well as the NFL and their new COVID policy. More news in the baseball world. We have a new name for Cleveland. There was a lot of talk about different names. Cleveland Spiders was one that really came to the forefront. And I know if you're wondering, the Cleveland Spiders were an American professional baseball team based in Cleveland, and that was their name as a member of the now-defunct American Association, followed by 11 seasons in the National League. That was their name back in the early days, 1887 to 1899, so a lot of people thought it might be the Cleveland Spiders. That is not the case. New name for the now-defunct Indians is the Cleveland Guardians. You heard at the beginning of the hour on the top of the news here, the Cleveland Guardians, the new name. And I'm trying to find some comments about this. There's a lot of people that are like, eh, no, CBS Sports has a kind of a tweet there with the logos that are on. Let's just go to the Indians Twitter page and see what some of the comments are saying. Because I'm sure they have released this. Well, the Indians have not actually made this, or Cleveland on their Twitter page has not actually made this official, but the leak is Cleveland Guardians is the name of the team for the Cleveland baseball squad. Cleveland announces name change to Guardians. And we'll read this story, known as the Indians since 1915. Ball Club announced a name change Friday with a video on Twitter narrated by actor Tom Hanks. So together we are all. Yeah, I didn't look at the video. I just saw the initial tweet.
We are a city on the rise.
That's 2 minutes and 11 seconds. I'm not playing that whole thing. Name change will be effective at the end of the 2021 season. The organization spent most of the past year whittling down a potential list of names that was nearly 1,200 over a month ago. The process quickly accelerated. The club landed on Guardians. Team owner Paul Dolan said last summer social unrest touched off by the George Floyd incident and the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis spurred his intention to change the club's name. Dolan said in a statement, "We are excited to usher in the next era of the deep history of baseball in Cleveland. Cleveland has and always will be the most important part of our identity. Therefore, we wanted a name that strongly represents the pride, resiliency, and loyalty of Clevelanders. Guardians reflects those attributes that define us while drawing on the iconic Guardians of Traffic just outside the ballpark on the Hope Memorial Bridge. It brings to life the pride Clevelanders take in our city and the way we fight together for all who choose to be part of the Cleveland baseball family. While Indians will always be a part of our history, our new name will help unify our fans and city as we are all Cleveland Guardians," unquote. So the D-I-A-N-S at the end can stay the same and just add G-U-A-R instead of I-N. Guardians, Indians, Guardians, the new name there for the Cleveland baseball team. And now that I know what tweet I should be looking at, I'm interested in seeing what some of the comments say about the new name. Listen, on the surface, I'm not a huge fan of it. I guess it makes sense if you're from Cleveland, you might be a little bit more in favor of it. But something like the name, the logo needs some work. Hello, Tom Hanks. Cleveland Indians ownership lost its credibility, so I'm borrowing some of mine. I'm Tom Hanks. There's like some of these comments that you read. There's one, if you've ever seen the movie Major League, there's still, and I can't say the last word, but the groundskeeper guy is fixing the field. I knew that there was going to be some pretty funny comments on this. MLB Cathedral's Twitter page says, "Not bad, was rooting for Spiders. Guardians better suited for an NFL team. It's a horrible logo." I just love reading some of this. Like if somebody makes a new jersey with taking the I in, as I talked about, and putting the G-U-A-R on there for Guardians instead of Indians. So, yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm not a Cleveland fan, so it doesn't really matter, right? Guardians, the new name for the Cleveland baseball team. Do with that what you will. You can go online, plenty of places to see the new logos and get a feel for the new Cleveland Guardians. Again, that'll take place at the end of the 2021 season. So you're now in a situation where you're wondering. Guardians, by the way, is the fifth name in franchise history. The Blues, 1901. Broncos, 1902. The Naps from 1903 to 14. Indians from 15 to 21. And now the Guardians starting in the 2022 season here for Cleveland baseball. So, again, all kinds of logos can be found if you're looking for that. Just find it on Twitter. Google it. Search for it. You'll find it. Won't take very long. We have started the trading carousel as the Tampa Bay Rays have picked up a player here as a trade deadline is July 31st. And Nelson Cruz is headed to the Tampa Bay Rays in a four-player trade with the Minnesota Twins. Cruz is headed to Tampa Bay. And I hate it when these things... Okay. The Rays got Cruz and minor leaguer Calvin Fauscher from Minnesota, exchange for minor league right-handers Jill Ryan and Drew Strotman. So Cruz, the only real name that people will know in that. Nelson Cruz this year playing for the... playing for the Twins this year. Nelson Cruz, I'm going to try to look up his stats, and they weren't loading up for me as quick as I would have wanted to. He's hitting .278 this year. All right, that's his career average, my bad. Let me look at this year's stats for Nelson Cruz. Obviously, add some pop to the lineup for the Rays here as they try to make their run toward the World Series again, try to get back there. Cruz hitting .294, 19 homers, 50 RBI. He has struck out 63 times this season, which is not terrible. He had 131 strikeouts back in 2019. He's 164 was a career high back in 2015 with Seattle. So he spent the last three seasons in Minnesota. Well, the last two and then part of this season. Now he's headed to Tampa Bay to play for the Rays. So that's really the first well-known trade here before the trade deadline hits. And we will continue to kind of track all that activity because there's nothing really that's been hot. And it would be interesting to see how everything plays out there as far as trades are concerned. Kansas City Royals are back on the field tonight as they had yesterday off. Royals currently at 39-55 after winning two games earlier this week against Milwaukee. And then off day Thursday, they're back on the field to start a three-game set with the Detroit Tigers in Kansas City. The Royals 39-55. Tigers are 7-3 their last 10. They're now 47-51, third place in their division. Chris Bubich starts for the Royals against former Royal Willie Peralta, who's 3-1 this year with a 1.64 ERA for Detroit. So let's look at what's going on for the Royals as they're back on the field starting a three-game set tonight. All right, well, that should cover it here today. A lot of interesting things going on, even though there's not a lot of activity or really anything to talk about that happened as far as actual live sports last night. But, man, there's a lot of live things going on in the sporting world. Big thanks to everybody for tuning in today. Hope you have a great weekend. And we'll talk to you again on Monday here on Kitty Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.